Hello everyone, I'm Tara. We're discussing social entrepreneurship and various elements of positive social impact, what puts people and the planet before profit. Now, for social enterprises to be successful, as we have been discussing in the various chapters, over and above the various support in terms of funding, other forms of stakeholder support, one of the basic foundation elements is innovation. What are you bringing in that is unique? You know, is it CSR, regular CSR already been done? If you are an entrepreneur, especially a startup, a small entrepreneur, you want to get people to buy in, you can't be simply trying to replicate something which has been done elsewhere, because people will say, well, we have the option of going for the established ventures. Why should we risk our investment in you or collaborating with you or spending our time with you? So why should we invest in you? What is it that you're bringing to us that is unique? So while we have been talking about various elements of business plans, etc., let's now talk more about the concept. How out of the box thinking is at the heart and soul of your social enterprise. So let's talk about innovation. And when we talk about innovation, don't associate innovation only with technology. Innovation can be so varied in terms of, it could be employment-based, it could be technology-based, it could be collaboration-based. It's something that you do differently, not only in terms of technology and AI, etc. So when we're talking about innovation, we're talking about innovative thinking, how something which has not been tried is being tried now and is causing a disruption in a positive manner and leading to betterment of society and the planet. So let's look at social entrepreneurship. And this chapter is going to be absolutely full of examples that I'm going to give you globally with the kind of unique enterprises that people have come up with, where you would think that, oh my God, I couldn't even imagine that something like that was possible, or forget possible, like how did that strike someone, you know? So a lot of times, needs that are unmet are expressed, it's very visible that there is this need and it's unmet and, let there be a solution to it. But very often these innovative thinkers are coming up with needs that, the potential beneficiaries have not even realized can better their life so much, right? So let's keep that in our minds when we are discussing innovation, that it's about also identifying needs which one hadn't even thought that those exist, or how those could actually potentially elevate the lives of the marginalized communities across the globe. So let's touch on some of the global innovators and the kind of great ideas that they are coming up with. Here there's an idea, but here this is innovation which is not just at the thought point of view. This is innovation which has, by going through the various stages of its enterprise, from ideation reached fruition and been effective. So all the examples that I'm giving you are innovations which have been implemented. They are not just at an ideation stage. They have been implemented. They have shown tangible, concrete results in terms of having made a positive impact. Social innovation, once again, like innovation elsewhere, eventually can be for profit, not for profit, and it is eventually trying to create a better world for the with the priority being people and planet over simply just your profitability. Let's look at the difference between social innovation and social enterprise. So innovation is the idea, enterprise is the whole business model. So the two jointly eventually lead to positive transformation. Let's now delve into some of the very successful ideas, very unique ideas globally, which have been making a difference. So, for example, there is we talk a lot about equality, equity when we are talking about social enterprise and making changes to marginalized communities. Now, let's focus on gender equality. You know, of course, a lot has been done, but a lot still can be done. Now, purely from a, forget the social aspect of things, but purely from a biological point of view, women are the child bearers. So think about women in the workforce. Often, you know, forget a discussion in a college lecture, but even if you look around you, you would come across this constant, you know, conflict when of women in the workforce, when, you know, they have to take maternity leave, and they have to, you know, a lot of times women are choosing to give up their careers or take a back seat, then returning back to the careers. Very often organizations, you know, have practices where they're hiring, they're choosing to hire males versus females for these reasons that, you know, they are not ethical reasons, but we know that that happens. So there are countries that are acknowledging this and formalizing this rather than just having it, you know, psychologically at the back of your mind in terms of ethical practices. There are countries that are innovating their policies, innovating their employment structures to bring about innovation in equality as far as, you know, parity of genders is concerned. So, for example, in Finland and in Iceland, men have as much family leave as women. So while women get your maternity leave and more leave, etc., in Finland and Iceland, they have equated, which also means that a lot of times, you know, instead of women choosing to sit at home and or forget choosing having to, you know, sit at home more to take care of the families while the males go to work, could be reversed. And it could be, you know, males taking a break from the workforce and being the homemakers and taking care of the families, and the women going out and working. So it creates a platform which provides flexibility, disrupts the current mindsets, the traditional mindsets where it's very tried and tested that, you know, the man is going out and the woman is staying home. So this kind of parity provides a lot of flexibility, sets a standard and a role model for the world to emulate. A lot of other countries may see this, see how it has been received well, see it for its ethical impact of equality, and you know, may follow suit. So it's a very interesting innovation that has been implemented at a policy level, and again in the interest of creating more of an equitable world. Now, likewise, let's move to a completely different topography, a completely different country. And again, a need which is so integral and applies to you and me also, but someone sitting in the US saw, someone sitting internationally saw the potential and did something about it. So there is an app called Citizen Labs. Okay, what does Citizen Lab do? Now, when we have politicians anywhere in the world, politicians, when they are laying out policies, taking decisions, very often there is a gap of interaction between the politicians and the constituents, right? So how do they interact? Because politician physically, yes, they may be running an office where you come and meet them, their teams every so often, but it is difficult for a mass one-on-one interaction for a politician. But then that also creates a gap and disillusionment and disappointment among the constituents about not having a a voice and not being able to participate in the decision making for policies which are going to affect their lives. So Citizen Labs is a platform that connects politicians, local politicians, with the constituents in their area. In this way, through an app where, you know, scalability is there, where it does not require physical effort for interaction, the kind of participation that the masses can have with the politician in terms of ideas, in terms of, you know, grievances, in terms of contributions, you know, the kind of reach the politician can have in terms of, you know, surveys, in terms of getting a buy-in, having the eventual beneficiaries, you know, shared thoughts, is taken to another level. So then the decision making, which is eventually happening, which formally the decision is being made by the politician, but that the constituents and the masses are participating in this decision making because of this virtual interaction that they have been able to have, you know. And with technology, it's very easy through a message or an alert to reach out. So this has been a very good innovation to get mass participation and to then have the masses take ownership of the decision making, that the decisions were not made keeping us isolated, but we were very much part of the decision making process. So again, you see, the innovation is a political innovation. Yes, technology is involved, but the innovative thinking is so unique from the kind of interactions that we have seen traditionally. Now, coming to parts of Africa, and Africa again, as we have discussed in previous chapters as well, again, there is a lot of poverty there. There are a lot of marginalized communities. And but however, certain social entrepreneurs saw the need for micro insurance in these areas. So micro insurance is low premium insurance with different structures for the low income, bottom of the pyramid community. So already 4 or 5 of the largest insurance companies have penetrated the low income, bottom of the pyramid markets in parts of Africa with their micro insurance products, and which is so innovative, because traditionally, if something happens here to the main bread earner in these communities, there's nothing to fall back on. But with micro insurance, there is a certain shield and protection, where some there is some sense of securities to the dependence of these. And you can imagine, with the numbers involved, it would also be a win-win for the insurance companies as well. So yes, while there may or may not be profit considerations out there, but there is this social element of going and positively impacting, and it is a financially inclusive endeavor where even the people who have in the past been left out of insurance benefits can be part of this financial inclusion now. Now we have another innovation, which is on the medical front. So we know that children world over suffer from malnutrition. The whole process of going to hospitals or medical camps, clinics, checking malnutrition, trying to address it, is very laborious. It's an invasive process. It's a process where there's a lot of effort involved. In the process, a lot of malnutrition is left untracked and unaddressed. So there is paperweight armband, which in a non-invasive way measures malnutrition. So this, in this way, in a very easily trackable, monitored way, malnutrition can be tracked and identified specifically and addressed. And also what happens is that with the data which is there, which is with the tracking which is there, with that you can demonstrate to the beneficiaries and those who are being affected that, look, this is what is going on and you should address it, versus just trying to one-on-one trying to convince them that they need to participate in getting their health back up. So innovation in a way where you are using a form which will be a lot more acceptable to the eventual beneficiary, because it's non-invasive, it is more measurable, to demonstrate to them that they are the affected party and they should probably be doing something about it. So social innovation is using insights, using understanding of geographies, understanding of cultures, and getting inspired across multiple ideas for various needs, which, as I said, a lot of times the beneficiaries are not even aware that you know they should be addressing. So another innovation in another part of the world. Now, Mexico, there is a region called Tabasco, which has been affected by environmental vagaries. And what used to happen out there was that people were making homes from low quality materials themselves. And here, the first 3D printed housing was in Mexico was put up. And now these 3D printed houses are far stronger, more environmentally friendly, better quality to withstand the natural vagaries. So versus the houses which were being built by the local people themselves. Now, when we talk about 3D printing, could you think about whole homes being set up through this? So it is such an innovative thought, to work on this and to make a success out of it. So the whole horizon of innovation has limitless possibilities. We are seeing across the spectrum the kind of innovation that exists. And there is nothing like a glass ceiling as far as what the possibilities are. Of course, you have to adhere to your rules and regulations. You have to adhere to certain ethical standards and whatever the law of the land is. But as far as an idea is concerned, there is no law in terms of what you can think of as long as it is following the proper guidelines. So as you can see, I mean, this out of the box thinking from the various ideas that I have discussed would not have come if innovation was structured or there was like a template and your innovation had to fit into the template. So that is not what is happening. So continuing with various innovative ideas which are positively impacting the world, you have China, which was the most populous country, and now of course India has overtaken China. But in China also, we know that the population, there is a lot of disparity in terms of the income gap, the wealth gap. And at the same time, the world is moving in the direction of technology, moving in the direction of artificial intelligence. So there is a large segment of people who were being left out, as you know, in India as well, from the technological revolution. You know, understanding technology, there may be some basic understanding of mobile phone usage, etc., but could be large segments who are not very technology friendly, don't have the means to understand it optimally and to benefit from it. So when I was giving you an example of Sri Lanka in one of the previous chapters, we had seen how despite having 40,000 outlets, retail outlets in the rural areas for mobile services, yet the rural population was not really accessing them or subscribing to the services, because there was this mental block about being comfortable with technology. There was this aversion to staying connected, and there was lack of awareness about forget about giving up your privacy or connecting. There are so many other benefits you can get out of being connected. And once they invested in mobile service provider, invested in those intermediaries, counselors who they trained to reach out to people and educate them about how they can benefit from the positives of mobile, the mobile universe, a lot more subscribers came on board. So likewise, it's not simply a matter of money, but it's also simply a matter of awareness, not knowing, being underconfident in terms of the capacity to understand technology, assimilate technology. So in China, you have Squirrel AI, which uses AI to educate young people from backgrounds where they have been left out of the technological revolution. So to teach them technology, to make them a lot more comfortable, and to train them to understand technology better. So it is a technologically inclusive innovation, which is obviously then going to lead to the betterment of the youth and their families in these communities. Innovation in India is absolutely limitless given the population, given the scope, and I'm going to be talking about innovations right from Awaaz Day to regional language innovations, and of course as I had said in a previous chapter, social innovation and social enterprise is not simply the domain of the Eastern nations, not simply a domain of the developing nations, but also of the developed world. So innovation can happen wherever there are communities that can benefit from socially impactful endeavors. So going back to the Western world, we have in the US, there was a very, very interesting innovation. And once again, when I read about this innovation, I was really wondering that, who would have thought that something like this is even possible? So talking about this innovation, which is helping the health and nutrition and well-being of a community of people in the US, is your in the city of Atlanta. The city of Atlanta bought a food forest, which is a 7-acre forest, which has more than 100 species of fruit and nut trees, So the idea being that people who live in that city, who live around that, in and around that city, and come under the administration of that city, can access these, fruits and nuts from these trees, and not only use them for nutrition and food, but also, use them through planters, boxes, etc., to plant more of these trees. So it is something which is helping the, nutrition element of, possibly communities who do not have access to this kind of fresh produce, this kind of nutritious produce in their vicinity. The proximity and keep the fact that it is fresh, it is not processed, there is no transport involved. The proximity makes such a big difference. And eventually what the city is trying to ensure is that all the people who are the beneficiaries of this, these forests live within, half a mile of having access to these nutritious fruits and nuts. So you see, health and nutrition is not something which is only, of course, in parts of India, in parts of, Africa and so many other parts of the world. Yes, there is excessive deprivation when it comes to healthcare and nutrition, and requires transformation. And Digital India can help to transform that. Leadership under Viksit Bharat is encouraging a lot of innovation, but these are issues of nutrition, issues of deprivation also impact the Western world. So you have an idea of an innovation where something so unusual was thought of in terms of, buying an entire, investing in a 7-acre forest where your community could benefit from them. And again, when we were talking about Seva in a previous chapter, for an effective business model in the Kutch area, where they were trying, where with the women they were working with aloe vera products, and with the men they were working with the jatroba trees for the bio oil. There they were looking for land in the immediate vicinity of where these communities lived, so that you are not going far out, so that there is a lot of benefit of having land in the immediate proximity. So here, having proximity to the community of this food forest, it makes a huge difference versus, products being shipped to them from elsewhere, where there would be transportation costs, there could be issues of freshness, nutrition, all those elements. So that is how impactful you have. That is how impactful innovation can be. Now, some of you, several of you may have heard of Sophie's Kitchen, which is an award-winning, culinary enterprise. Now, they used innovation, again, in the interest of healthcare and creating awareness about that. Nutritious food and proteins can be quite expensive. So they actually innovated and came up with this microalgae, created this micro plant-based micro algae, which costs less than $2 per kg. And it is also very, very lightweight. So this helps nutrition in a very, very strong manner. And it also can be grown in created in areas which are not very, very healthy. This is cost effective, and also it can easily improve the nutrition factors. And as we have seen, it's easy to produce as well. So again, an innovation in the interest of healthcare. Now also, we have to have participation from society. We have to have participation from local communities who are the eventual beneficiaries when we're talking about innovation. So taking into account the needs of the local communities, there was this Norwegian company which addressed an issue in terms of deserts, where this extensive desertification, where the land loses moisture, there's degradation, and there they came up with an innovation to obviously in response to the need of local communities, so that there is some form of agriculture, some form of cultivation which can be done. So they came up with this spray which can be sprayed on, they created this spray which can be sprayed on the desert land, and it retains the, it helps the land retain the moisture. So and this is a combination of clay and water, and they call it liquid nano clay. And this helps to retain the moisture, which is preventing desertification, which is creating a more conducive environment for the local communities to, use those lands, which otherwise, could be wastelands and could not be harnessed in a positive manner to create any benefit or gain for the communities around those. So, so many kinds of innovations and ideas which are impacting communities across the world. Now, ecotourism, again, we have been talking about, so many enterprises like Seva, like, we'll be talking about Lijjat Papad, we'll be talking about so many others, where a lot of the local handlooms, handicrafts, etc., become very popular. Here, the innovation also has to be thought of in terms of innovative marketing, because the challenge is not just the creation of these local products, but the challenge is to ensure that they are reaching in a seamless manner to the buyers across the world, so that it's not just simply a small scale thing, it can be scalable and really benefit the local communities. So social innovation can have so many forms in terms of technology. You can get, as a result of that, you can get investors to participate with you. When we were talking about the chapter on funding, we saw how challenging it is for social enterprises to bring in funding. And if social enterprises can come up with an innovation which is really unique, then chances of getting funding are that much higher. When I'll be mentioning a few more examples of innovative enterprises, you will see how they have progressed and transitioned to getting buy-ins from large people supporting them and mentoring them and fund providing their capital needs. So another very useful. You know, when we've been talking about staffing at various points of time, how staffing and employee engagement is very important. The right alignment of values is very important, and making employees feel like have a sense of ownership and responsibility. So Limeade came up with this app where for large organizations, especially where employees can feel a little alienated from the decision making, from the participation, Limeade created this platform where employees can be engaged in a very effective manner. They can have a reach with the senior management. Their ideas can be submitted. There's a lot of learning, and they can have interaction across various levels. So this gives a sense of inclusion to the employees versus being in complete isolation from the key stakeholders. So there are a lot of socially responsible, there are a lot of socially responsible investors who will look for innovative enterprises like these and invest in them. Then you also have innovation from an investment point of view, where these SRIs or socially responsible investors are only investing in companies that are ethical. You know, they are not investing in companies which have a negative impact. That is also an innovative thinking. Now, talking a little bit more about innovation and enterprise which is positively impacting the planet. Let's look at some of the examples there and how collaborations are happening there too.